This is Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. And all week we've been spending time with musicians involved in the Allerton Music Barn Festival at Allerton Park in Monticello, and today is no exception to that. In fact, we have a very special guest today. Trumpeter John Faddis is with us, along with sax player and keyboardist Chip McNeil, who is with the University of Illinois School of Music Jazz faculty. In fact, he's the head of that program. And John Faddis is here to perform at the Allerton Barn Festival tomorrow night at 8:30, and Chip, along with Chip Stevens and others on the faculty, will be performing kind of a recreation program of a CD, or at least of many arrangements on a CD, called Remembrances with John Faddis, arrangements by Carlos Franzetti. So we'll be sampling some of those and talking with Mr. Faddis about his life and career on Live and Local. Stay with us. Trumpeter John Faddis with pianist Kenny Barron, bassist Ray Brown, tenor saxophonist Harold Land, and drummer Mel Lewis in Joe King Oliver's and Clarence Williams' West End Blues here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That's from John Faddis' disc called Legacy. John Faddis is on the show with us today, along with Chip McNeil. John Faddis is a trumpeter, composer, teacher, band leader, all kinds of other things.
Baritone.
And, baritone?
Baritone.
Like singer baritone?
Yeah, like an opera singer.
Yeah, like...
Do you dabble
yeah,
in
that's,
opera?
That's, yeah, that's... something we were something we were talking about while listening to the
baby
music. And the other... What are you, a tenor, Chip?
Yeah, probably. I'm the Irish tenor from Scotland.
And tenor saxophone player, Chip McNeil.
Yes.
And some kind of time keyboardist and arranger. And are you? Do you also compose as well?
I sure do.
Yeah, and head
time.
Of the...
I get time.
Head of the jazz faculty at the University of Illinois School of Music. Mm-hmm. And John Faddis is headlining tomorrow night's concert at the Allerton Music Barn Festival at Allerton Park in Monticello. And Chip and company will be the orchestra, essentially. And it's virtually a well,
it's most of the jazz orchestra faculty here, except for minus the trumpeter that's on our faculty, Tito Carrillo. He's not, obviously. John is doing his stuff. And we're actually doing a couple things. Tonight, as you know, we're doing a couple of the jazz faculty plus myself are working with Nathan and Julie Gunn mm-hmm. for their concert tonight, which is primarily, I guess, cabaret style type things from Nathan's latest record. I think that's on Sony. And then
just
tomorrow
before
night,
sunrise.
Yes. Just mm-hmm. before sunrise. That's the name. Thank you. And then tomorrow night, we're going to do things from John's record called Remembrances, all orchestrated by wonderful arranger composer Carlos Franzetti. He's terrific.
And we're going to sample some of those on mm-hmm. the show today.
And we've augmented actually a little bit along with the jazz faculty we have, because we have some oboe and English horn and French horn. So we have a couple other members of the School of Music faculty, John Dee, who's the oboe teacher here, and Bernard Scully, who's the new French horn teacher.
Yeah, so he was on our show yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Talking
they're
a bit about
us.
Monday's concert.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so the festival opens tonight and runs through Labor Day, and lots of different concerts going on, and I'll be pleased to actually introduce you guys tomorrow night for the concert.
So I'm yeah, but we've met.
That's right.
Oh, we'll introduce you to the audience. That was John Faddis, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you very much for coming in and doing the show.
Take care.
Thank you. Good night.
All right, we'll play an hour of music from John Faddis' CD. No, it's really great to have you in here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah,
it's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us a little bit about Remembrances, since that's kind of going to be the focus of tomorrow night's concert.
Well, it was a different project that I did, I think, in 1996. Different for me in that I'm usually known as a very extroverted trumpet player. And the orchestrations that Carlos did for some standards like Sophisticated Lady, Laura, Clifton Webb movie. Mm-hmm. I liked him. He's funny. Mm-hmm. And some original tunes. The orchestrations are very subtle and introverted. and it was designed to bring out a different side of my playing, which it certainly did. It's very beautiful orchestrations with different instrumentation than you would usually find on a jazz record. You know, you have oboe, English horn, you have bass clarinet, baritone, soprano saxophone, have a couple of flutes, clarinet, French horn, trombone, and I'm usually playing flugelhorn or muted trumpet. So it's a softer side of John Faddis that will be presented at the concert tomorrow evening.
Well, we heard, I guess, the fairly part of the brash side in our opening music with the West End Blues, but there's still a lot of lyricism in that particular tune, I thought. I've seen you described as having, you know, the full range of the trumpet. You can go as high as it goes and as low as it goes, and very virtuosic, but also a wonderful ballad player. So this obviously is bringing out that aspect of things.
I hope so. I'm sitting here with Chip, and I'm thinking, we were just talking about someone else that he works with, Arturo Sandoval, and I'm saying, why is Chip working with these trumpet players? But, you know, he should start a saxophone band.
I love trumpet players. And prior to that, Maynard Ferguson, speaking of, you know.
Exactly. So.
And all of whom could probably be described as very extroverted in a way in some of their playing. But all of whom, I would say, and certainly with John, have multifaceted sides to their playing and do it beautifully. I mean, I think just having played some of this music, we had a rehearsal this morning. I mean, and hearing the way John plays the melodies and just states them simply and beautifully with a great sound, I mean, that's just the mark of a great musician. And I've really enjoyed that with all those guys.
Well, thank you. You know, Louis Armstrong always felt that to be able to play a nice melody was one of the most important things you could do as a musician.
Yeah.
So that's why he listened to Caruso. Speaking of opera singers, Caruso, he listened to Bing Crosby and did all those things with Bing Crosby. He listened to Guy Lombardo,
yeah,
which a lot of people would think is sort of, you know, corny.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, auld lang syne, and with the heavy vibrato in the saxophone section.
Very heavy.
But
yeah.
Louis Armstrong loved that stuff. Yeah. And one of the things that knocks me out about Louis Armstrong is, you know, in New York, Louis Armstrong's home has become a museum.
Right.
And it's on the historical record for New York City. And it has all of Louis Armstrong's tapes and his music and everything in the home and the archives. And Louis Armstrong is unbelievable. And the thing, you know, he would play along with records. When he traveled, he would take a stack of records and he would play along with Caruso.
Yeah.
And he would play along with Guy Lombardo. He would play along with his own records.
Right.
And you can go to his house and hear those things. So if any listeners are out there are going to be in New York, you should go by Louis Armstrong's house.
Which is near treasure for sure.
Near LaGuardia Airport in Corona, Queens.
And do you follow in his footsteps in the sense that you also do some singing, or do you just stick to the trumpet? Because he's a wonderful singer in spite of his voice.
Well, I have a very good friend that used to go around to Lewis's house, and Lewis would say, "Come on in, Pops, and let me tell you the history of jazz." And his name is Clark Terry, who's going to be 90 years old in December. And Clark, when he met Louis Armstrong, one of the first things Louis Armstrong told him is, learn how to sing, because when you get older, it's good so you can rest your chops.
Yeah.
I don't really do that. And I've thought about, you know, I've thought about going to someone and taking some singing lessons. Most of the singing I do is just like fun novelty stuff.
Well, Nathan's around this week if you wanted to get some really good coaching.
No, I won't go there.
Are the
promised. We can do it together. Maybe the two of us together would equal one. No.
You know, I've got a better idea. Why don't we play some of this CD?
Yes, that would be a good idea.
How about, what did I cue up here? Wayne Shorter's Footprints.
Ah.
We just finished rehearsing that one.
Sure,
beautiful,
did.
You know, beautiful.
Great.
That'd be great, so I can learn how it goes.
Arranged and conducted by Carlos Franzetti and featuring trumpeter John Faddis, who's going to be at the Allerton Barn Festival tomorrow night in Monticello. It's live and local. Was there a contrabassoon? I mean, a bass clarinet in there?
Yes.
That's what it sounded like.
Do, 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 boom, boom.
Yeah.
Trombone, I think.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Boom, 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 boom. Get my baritone.
Yeah, you said you were a baritone earlier. That you're trying to for the bass range there. That was a tune called Footprints by Wayne Shorter and the trumpeter John Faddis and lots of other folks involved in that performance and the orchestration by Carlos Franzetti.
I shouldn't interrupt, but I'm going to, because actually on the recording is one of our now currently on the jazz faculty here, Jim Pugh, great jazz trombonist, right?
There he is.
A new father.
And new daddy.
Oh, seriously?
New daddy, yes.
Oh, really?
As of April. And well, unfortunately, the recipient of a broken arm not too long ago, but he's healing nicely. So.
Is he able to play right now?
He can play. He just can't hold his trombone very well.
But actually, he's going to be conducting.
He's going to be conducting on the concert
performance tomorrow.
Yep. Oh, he is. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. So he's conducting the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So it's tomorrow night at Allerton Music Barn Festival. John Faddis and many of the jazz and other wind faculty at the University of Illinois performing a program that will include that tune. Since you said you were rehearsing it earlier today, and a number of other tunes from this disc called Remembrances. Today's program on Live and Local is made possible in part by the University of Illinois School of Music presenting the Allerton Music Barn Festival, September 2nd through 6th at Allerton Park. For more information, visit allertonmusicbarn.com. And, of course, today is the 2nd of September, and that means that the festival starts tonight with Nathan and Julie Gunn. I'm pleased to say on behalf of Allerton and the School of Music that the concert tonight is sold out. In fact, most of them are. John Faddis' concert is pretty darn close to it, if it isn't already. But I do have some tickets that I'll be giving away, two pairs of tickets to the show as we progress in the program. In fact, we'll do the first one as we get into our next piece of music in just a little bit.
Kevin, can I say something?
Yeah, please.
Don't just give the tickets away. Do some kind of trivia question or jazz.
We can try that.
Yeah.
We can try that. We can even let you set up the question if you want.
Oh.
You don't want to do that. You really don't want to do that.
Nobody will know the answer, right?
I could do it that way, if you like.
Right. Make one. Let's put it this way. If I could answer the question, maybe that would
be
fair.
Well, okay. You played earlier West End Blues by King Oliver.
Yeah.
Louis Armstrong recorded West End Blues in 1928, and so did King Oliver, I think a few months after Louis Armstrong did. But King Oliver did not play the trumpet intro. Who did?
Oh, I'm not going to know the answer to that.
That's close.
Do you know the answer?
I think it I probably don't know. I'm guessing, but Buddy Bolden, probably not. No.
There's no recordings of Buddy
Bolden.
If
Chip doesn't know the answer, we can't put this out as a question for the tickets.
Charlie Parker just celebrated his 90th birthday. Mm-hmm. In his great quintet of 1957, which included Miles Davis, I think Al Haig, mm-hmm. was it Tommy Potter,
I think.
And Max Roach. Mm-hmm. Who replaced, this is a two-part question, who replaced Miles Davis on trumpet and who replaced Max Roach on drums?
No, I'm going to let you go for it. Are we supposed to be answering these for the people?
I
thought the people were supposed to call in.
Do you know the answer?
Go ahead. You can tell him.
Do you know the answer?
Okay. Kenny Dorham and Roy Haynes.
And here's I got one back for you. Who else would have celebrated the 90th birthday this year besides Charlie Parker?
Boy,
Not a jazz player.
Grover Cleveland Alexander?
Well, somewhat of a jazz player. Well, I guess he kind of played jazz sometimes, sort of, kind of.
Who else celebrated a 90th birthday?
So that'd be
this a major figure in what area?
In music.
It would be 1920.
In music.
So who was born in 1920?
I think it was 90. Well, then maybe.
In music. Who would have?
It might not be 90.
Who might it have
no,
been?
Maybe.
Who might it have been?
Well, now I'm going to have to look this up.
Let's somebody move on like to, Sinatra or
Let's yeah. move on to another topic. I'm going to look that up because I might be misremembering. Then that would be a really bad trivia question. Let's talk about Dizzy Gillespie.
Remembrances.
Remembrances, that's right.
Let's talk about Dizzy Gillespie just because, you know, in all the bios that I've read about you, John Faddis, you cite Dizzy Gillespie as a friend and a mentor and somebody who kind of discovered you, I guess, or at least picked up on you and brought you along.
You can't deny your father. And Dizzy, you know, when I was growing up, Dizzy was my hero. My trumpet teacher, Bill Catalano, told me, Dizzy Gillespie is the greatest trumpet player in the world. And I was probably about 10 years old at the time. And from that time on, I said, well, if he's the greatest, that's who I want to sound like. So I started practicing Dizzy's music, and when I got to meet him, the first time I was about 12 years old, and I was too shy to say anything. I was so scared. So I said, the next time I meet him, I'm going to talk to him. And my mother took me to the Monterey Jazz Festival, and she said, hey, John. I said, huh? There's Dizzy. Where? Mom, go get the records. And I'd brought all of my Dizzy Gillespie records to the festival in the hopes that I would meet him. And he would autograph my record. So Dizzy came over and he sat on the grass at the fairgrounds, and I had this stack of 50 Dizzy Gillespie records. And Dizzy looked at me and said, I don't remember this record. And I said, yeah, that's the one where your solo goes, do-da-da-loo-dee-da-da-da, and I start singing his solo to him, and he looked at me like I was nuts. But a couple of weeks later, Dizzy let me sit in with him. And that's when I knew I wanted to become a musician. That was it. And I was so nervous sitting in with Dizzy at a club called the Jazz Workshop in San Francisco. Sure. I still remember the room spinning this way. That's clockwise. I guess. It was spinning that way. And I almost fainted on stage. I hadn't played a note. And I was so scared. And Dizzy and I were very close. He was my mentor, and he showed me and taught me things about music. He was like a father to me, as were many other great jazz musicians when I first came to town. You know, people like Buddy Tate or Sweets Edison or Clark Terry or Thad Jones and Mel Lewis. You know, they all treated me like a son. I was 18 years old. I didn't know what I was doing. All I knew is how to play the trumpet. I didn't know anything else. I knew how to play the trumpet. And I knew how to tell bad jokes. That's it. That's what people were. And Ron Bridgewater could tell you because he's doing a concert tomorrow.
He sure is.
And he was in New York when I first started playing with Thad and Mel. And he and Cecil and Dee Dee.
They were on the band, right?
Hated my jokes with a passion. But eventually, you know, I just spent years and years sitting in with Dizzy Gillespie whenever I could. And then later, I put together a couple of bands for him, big bands that toured the States and Europe and Japan. And then it was funny. I started my own group, and he came and sat in with my group. It was great. So Dizzy was always very supportive of me and my development. I think he really, you know, Dizzy, at the time when I met him, there weren't many young trumpet players that were into Dizzy. And I think there are a couple of reasons for that. One, Dizzy's style was very difficult.
Right.
Rhythmically, harmonically, and technically. Mm-hmm. And two, younger trumpet players like to listen and they tend to gravitate towards those musicians who are younger and of their generations. And so when I got, you know, in the middle '60s, people were listening to Clifford Brown, Freddie Hubbard, Woody Shaw, and of course Miles. You know, those were the main trumpet influences at that time. Maybe some Lee Morgan.
Yeah.
And Dizzy, you know, so here comes this young kid. He got 50 Dizzy Gillespie records. He's memorized almost every Dizzy Gillespie solo on record. And I think that helped to inspire Dizzy some more, because it had been 20 years since his main influence, when in 1945, when he started to influence all the trumpet players, when he influenced Miles and Fats Navarro and Red Rodney and Kenny Dorham and Little Benny Harris and all those trumpet players. So Dizzy, you know, I think he was very aware of his place in history, and I think it was a way for him to ensure that his music continued.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's play some more music.
Did I talk too long?
No, you certainly did not.
Wonderful.
No,
I was enjoying the story.
You're just doing a wonderful... there were no bad jokes, so that was good.
I have one for you, but it's not mine. I would like to share with you Dizzy Gillespie's favorite joke.
So is it clean?
Yes, it is. Okay. And we were speaking a little bit earlier when the music was going about earphones and things like that and loud music. So it's been scientifically shown that the young generation now there's a great rate of hearing loss because of iPods and earphones and earbuds and just listening to music too loudly. So that's one of the things that actually happened to Dizzy in real life, because Dizzy used to carry this big Chinese cymbal and he used to stand right in front of it, and he wanted the drummer to pound this cymbal, and Dizzy lost his, you know, a little bit of his hearing in his ear. So the story goes, the joke goes, this guy needed a hearing aid. So he went to the doctor, and the doctor examined his ears and did some tests, and he says, you're going to need a hearing aid. So I have this hearing aid here, and this costs $29.95. It's okay. And we have this hearing aid. It's a little better. Costs $99.95. And then we have this hearing aid for you. This is state-of-the-art. It's brand new. It's unbelievable. But it costs $5,000. The guy says, Doc, I want the $5,000 one. So Doc hooks him up and fits him with the hearing aid, and this guy is totally excited. He's walking down the street, and he sees one of his friends, his buddies, coming towards him. He says, hey, man, how you doing? Say, you won't believe it. I just got this hearing aid. It's state-of-the-art, and it costs $5,000. And his friend says, $5,000? Damn, what kind is it? He says, 230.
Yeah, that happens a lot, doesn't it?
That's why Ron and Cecil and Dee Dee.
No, that was Dizzy's joke.
Okay.
He made the disclaimer. That's right. It's not his own joke there.
But yeah, I like it.
It's a good one.
Yeah, let's play some music,
let's
Kevin.
Let's play some music. I think it's a good idea.
All right, well, tomorrow night is this concert with John Faddis and Chip McNeil and colleagues at the Allerton Barn Festival. And I will give away a pair of tickets to the first caller who can identify the composer of the primary composer of this tune, which features John Faddis. Well, apparently we stumped everybody with that one. Maybe you're like I am, and you might know the tune, and you don't know who wrote anything. A Night in Tunisia, and I thought we gave a pretty good hint in talking about Dizzy Gillespie at some length here. And Dizzy Gillespie with John Hendricks and Frank Paparelli, composers of that tune, featuring John Faddis, trumpet, and pianist Kenny Barron, bassist Ray Brown, tenor sax player Harold Land, and drummer Mel Lewis on John Faddis' Legacy CD. And you have a new-ish or new CD about to come out or has come out?
Well, I did a CD in, I think it was released in 2006, called Taranga.
Well, that long ago.
Mm-hmm. And it's about time for a new one.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Well,
you've been doing some teaching.
I've been teaching, but I think along the lines of Taranga, which included some African percussionists, I would like to explore a little bit more of that style of music, you know, with the African percussion. It's just a very organic sound to me, and I like playing with that stuff. So that would probably be Taranga number two.
Well, you know, we've got a brilliant African percussionist here on the visiting faculty named...
I'm not sure you
A djembe player. I'll think of it in a little bit.
I don't even think about it.
Chip McDjembe?
Yeah, no.
Not Chip McDjembe, no, but me. Chip McNeil is our other guest on today's show here on Live and Local. And John Faddis, Chip McNeil, and colleagues are going to be playing at the Allerton Music Barn Festival tomorrow night. And today's broadcast on Live and Local made possible in part by a grant from the Meredith Foundation dedicated to supporting the musical arts in performance and presentation. Bolukada Konde.
Oh, yeah.
Is faculty.
I knew exactly who you meant. That's right. Yeah. I was blanking myself here.
So if he's on campus.
I beg your pardon?
He is on campus.
Is he on the leave?
I saw him actually the other day, yeah. And they have lots of African percussion ensemble. They have an African percussion ensemble, mm-hmm. and I know they have a class in it, and I know he's involved with that, too.
And he's involved in teaching actually grade school kids.
Yes. He certainly is and does a great job, yeah. And so that's true. Yeah. So, yeah, when you get ready to do Taranga 2, you can come back and hang out with the percussion ensemble.
I'm down.
There you go.
JohnFaddis.net will get you the information about John Faddis and about that recording and other things. I want to give some other events that are going on in our area before we get back to our conversation. Let's see. Gino's Place in Champaign is having an open microphone jam session called Blues and Brews. That's at 8 o'clock tonight. Aroma Cafe presents Dave Easley tonight, Folk and Jazz. That's tonight at 7 o'clock in downtown Champaign also. The U of I Jazz Combo, the Tito Carrillo Ensemble, is at the Iron Post in downtown Urbana tonight at 7 o'clock.
Tito's playing tonight?
He sure
He's
is.
Playing
well,
tonight.
His combo is. His
student. Oh, his
group.
Student.
His student. But he'll be there. He may play. He plays sometimes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So are you rehearsing tonight? Well, you're playing tonight. Well,
I'm playing with Nathan and Julie Gunn out at Allerton, along with actually Dana Hall, who's also playing on the concert with John tomorrow night, and Larry Gray, our jazz bass professor. So we're
Well, you might be able to let John go and hear Tito.
Piggy Lee.
Yeah.
Peggy Lee.
Born in 1920.
Oh, that wasn't who I was thinking of. I still have to look that
Ravi Shankar.
Ravi.
Is that the end? Oh, you're looking it up right now. You should
He's
have your
it.
Cell phone
He's
off.
He's looking for people in 1920.
The Mean Lids are playing at Granite Center at the Uncorked event tonight at 5 o'clock in Urbana. The Country Gentlemen are at Kickapoo Landing tomorrow night at 5:30 in Oakwood. The Prairie Dogs are at the Iron Post tomorrow night at 5 o'clock. It's the Country, Bluegrass, and Gospel Jam at the Community Center in Findlay tomorrow night at 7 o'clock.
Amen.
The Rust Belt Road Show. So that's something that's new to me with Country, Bluegrass, and Gospel. No, that's I said that already. Folk and Americana is at the Clark Bar in Champaign tomorrow night at 7 o'clock.
Some Clark bars.
Yeah, remember those candy bars? I want a Clark bar.
You know, I wonder if that's how they came up with the name of the Clark bar. I didn't even think about that.
Sonny Clark?
It is on Clark Street.
Sonny Clark.
If they're really the Clark hit, they were thinking bar. About Sonny Clark. Great piano player.
No, the Clark bar.
Clark Terry.
I think
yeah,
the Clark bar
right.
is more
there
like
are,
it.
There's a whole lot of Clarks in jazz, I guess.
Talk about talk
Kenny
a little
Clark.
Bit. Talk
Kenny
a little
Clark,
bit, if yeah. you don't mind, John, about your teaching. because, you know, you list that as one of the big highlights of your career now.
Teaching is something I believe is in my blood. My father was very much involved with the civil rights movement in Oakland, California in the 60s. And he became a high school teacher, teaching history. And then when I met Dizzy, when I met Thad Jones, when I met Snooky Young and Sweets Edison and Roy Eldridge and all of these great, Clark Terry and Lou Soloff, all of these musicians taught me without even thinking about it, without asking for a dime. So I really believe it's my responsibility and other musicians' responsibility that achieve a certain amount of success to teach. And I do so in a different way. I do so now formally at Purchase College in New York, and I teach some repertoire and I teach some graduate students. And what I notice is that when they're going for the master's degree and they can't get up and lecture about jazz. They can't stand up and tell you about Louis Armstrong and Bix Beiderbecke and the original Dixieland Jazz Band and Gene Goldkett's orchestra. Yeah. They can't tell you any of that stuff. They don't know. So I think it's my responsibility to pound that into their heads and to make sure that when they come out of Purchase College or wherever it is I'm teaching, whether it's Purchase College or I'm going to do a master class somewhere, that they have some kind of idea about the history of this music, the importance of this music, the main contributors of this music, some of the different styles in this music, and how it gets them to where they are today. And if they have that foundation, then they can do a lot. And I believe that it's so important. And I'm sure Chip believes the same thing because he teaches.
Mm-hmm. Certainly do. I mean, we have actually the person that probably doing the most as far as actually teaching history on a daily basis here is Professor Hall, Dana Hall. Dan is very much into the history of the music, as we all are, but he's formally teaching those classes mm-hmm. every day so that it's actually a requirement. All our undergrad jazz majors have to take those classes, and it's just important that they understand it. You have to know the lineage of the music to understand where it's coming from and where it's going to go, where you have the possibility to take it, you know, along with all the other things that go along with it.
And I hear he's quite a writer on jazz, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He certainly is. He's a wonderful writer.
Well, it's funny about Dana, because Dana, I first met him at, I think it was DePaul.
Yeah, he went to DePaul. Right?
And I heard him. I said, whoa, who is this guy? And then we played a little gig in Italy. Somebody said, you want to come and do a gig? I went over to Italy and did a gig. He was playing drums. I said, okay, I'm bringing him out to play with the Carnegie Hall Jazz Band. Mm-hmm. And one of the amazing things about Dana is he is so well-versed, not only in music, but he also holds a degree in aerospace engineering.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm. And he holds a degree in ethnomusicology.
Why haven't I had him on this show yet? I'm going to have to work on that.
I don't know. Like I said, the resources are here.
Yeah.
Well, he just came out with a really great album, mm-hmm. And you should have him on your show.
He was voted Chicago End of the Year, I think, last year.
Yeah.
So, and he had...
Seriously?
He has a pretty recent CD. I think it's Into the Light, I think is the title.
We're going to have to work on that.
A lot of original stuff. Yeah, all of us. Yeah. We all have CDs.
Well, I've had a lot of you guys on the show.
And everybody, I will say this about the jazz faculty, too, has a great history of writing. I mean, Ron Bridgewater did a lot of writing. He had a group with his brother, with Cecil, probably when you guys were in New York together, you know, playing with Thad Mel Lewis. They were doing their thing, and Ron still does a lot with that. All of the people on the faculty have recordings, and we all write, we all play. I feel like we all have a pretty good knowledge of and are well-versed in the history of the music, and that's just part of what we do. I mean, that's what we're trying to bring to the students. And having John come and play and reinforcing all that and bringing all his wealth of knowledge is part of that.
So are you doing some master classes while you're here?
No, but I think I might go to the Post tonight.
Yeah.
And see Tito's ensemble.
That'll be a master class.
And you know, sometimes it's not necessarily a formal master class, but you're sitting across the table from someone and you can say one sentence to them and it can make a difference.
And I'll bet if you show up there and with your horn in hand, you can give a class for them right there. You can give a class for them right there.
That depends on if you get a little sleep time in between rehearsals, I think.
What time are they performing this evening?
They're at 7 o'clock at the Iron Post tonight.
Two sets.
I'll be okay. I can sleep from 3 to 6.
Yeah,
I
remember, there you go. You got a little time.
I remember you go up that street and you make a right and you go to the
Race and Green Street. Yeah, okay. Right the you'll find it.
A great place for jazz, the Iron Post.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And you mentioned the Carnegie Hall Jazz Band, which you have led, which is now called the John Faddis Jazz Orchestra.
The John Faddis Jazz Orchestra of New York. Yeah, because I threw that in there because
do you have one of Pennsylvania also?
No, but if you have the Jazz Orchestra of New York, it spells Johnny, J-O-N, and my name has no H, so I thought that was, I like messing around like that. But yes, much to my wife's chagrin, I'm continuing I have the John Faddis Jazz Orchestra of New York, the continuation of the Carnegie Hall.
That spells Junie.
Johnny, J-O-N.
J-O-N.
John.
Jazz Orchestra.
Of
New York.
New York. Orchestra of.
Two O's.
You leave out the preposition.
Yes.
Duh.
I like Junie.
But, you know, I still have all of the music from Carnegie Hall that we commissioned from writers and arrangers such as Jim McNeely, who was a student here at University of Illinois.
Sure was. He's an alumni, yeah.
You know, Michael Abeni did some beautiful ballads for the band. Slide Hampton, you know, the great arranger and composer.
Slide's been here.
Slide, Frank Foster.
Yeah.
Jimmy Heath. You know, we commissioned a lot of people to write for the band, and I have those arrangements, and we're going to, you know, at this point in my career, I'm going to start concentrating on John Faddis.
Well, why not, you know?
That's right.
Why not?
That's a good thing.
You know, sort of like Lou Piniella. You know, Lou wanted to spend some time with his family and stuff, you know, take care of Lou Piniella.
That's right. A little me time.
Yeah.
We got a few Cubs fans in the studio here anyway. I'm sorry to all you folks.
I remember when they put lights on in Wrigley Field. They put lights in it and everybody was up in arms because they thought it was sacrilegious.
When I was a kid, used to go there. My dad used to take me there and we saw Twilight doubleheaders. And went before the lights, you know, and the lights would, before that, they would just play the second game. When it got dark, that was the end of the game, wherever it was.
But they put in lights, and then now the Cubs fans can watch the Cubs lose at night.
At night, that's right. You can watch the games
as
long.
I got him.
There you go.
I got him with that one.
That's okay. It.
Jason Hayes is our intern, and they're trying to get him because he's wearing his Cubs t-shirt right now, and
you know,
yeah, he deserves all of our sympathy.
It used to be in jazz that a lot of athletes.
I know where you're going. Yeah.
No, used to come to jazz clubs and just hang out and stuff. And I was playing a gig in New York at the Jazz Standard, and Orlando Cepeda, the Baby Bull, from the San Francisco Giants, and then the St. Louis Cardinals. You know, they traded Orlando way because they got Willie McCovey. Mm-hmm. But he came to, he said he used to take Willie, you know, he used to try to get the athletes on his team to go out and hear Miles and Kenny Dorham. He started naming all these guys, Joe Henderson, he started naming all these guys. I said, wow. And so I asked him, I said, who was the toughest pitcher that you ever had to face? And he didn't hesitate. He said, Ferguson Jenkins.
Oh.
He said, Ferguson Jenkins. He said he was talking to Roberto Clemente.
Yeah.
And he said, how do you hit this guy?
Yeah.
And Roberto said, I don't know.
I don't
know. I can't figure him out.
Speaking of Ferguson Jenkins, it's funny, in athletes in jazz, when I used to work with Maynard, when he was around, when we played the showcase many times in Chicago, and always when we were in Chicago, Billy Williams, and Ferguson Jenkins would always come out. They were huge jazz fans, and they would always show up. And in New York, there were athletes that would come out all the time. They loved jazz. Yeah, and it's funny. I mean, it's
current generation, not so much, I guess.
I don't know.
Or do they?
Not as much.
Maybe not as much, but I think just getting jazz out to the public. But there's a correlation, I think, between athletes
and Purchase jazz. College, where I teach in New York, Purchase is part of State University of New York. Mm-hmm. Jim Pugh used to be there. Sure. Carl Kramer used to be there. Mm-hmm. You're recruiting our cast.
Yes, I know. But, so when are you going to be here next?
Bernie Williams, former New York Yankee, was studying guitar at Purchase. So
he'd come
up there for lessons. And,
good for him.
So yeah.
Right on.
Wow, jazz and baseball. That's another conversation right there.
Well, those are two deeply rooted in America. Speaking of Americana,
I think both
of those are about as Americana as you can get. You know?
Homegrown.
Those are true American experiences.
Yeah, definitely.
Both of those things. And I think that's why there's
a shirt with mustard from the hot dog.
That's right.
Mustard over your shirt.
That's right.
Well, we are just about out of time on this show. It always does go by quickly, and so we'll go out with some
baseball,
music. Yes.
Did you hear the story about the World Series that was performed? Well, not performed, but played over in Hawaii, and I don't want to name the countries that were playing, but it was a true World Series, not just American baseball. Yeah. But they had, as the Little League World Series, they had they had baseball players from all the countries, and I'll just call it the A team and the B team, and the A team was leading the B team 1-0. And it was the bottom of the ninth inning, and the B team was at bat, and there were two outs. The bases were loaded. There was a full count on the batter, and the pitcher wound up and threw the ball, and the batter hit a line drive out into left field. And before the guy could catch it, this wild boar ran onto the field, jumped up, and ate the baseball. They didn't call it a home run. They ruled it an inside the pork home run.
Oh, I knew it.
My head is in my hands. You
yes,
can't see
I knew
this.
It
was in my hands before that came out.
They didn't call him out. They ruled it an inside the pork
inside
home run.
Inside the pork, yes.
Will you be telling jokes at the concert tomorrow night?
I believe not. So that's all the more reason for people. That's all the more reason for the listeners to show up to the concert, because they will not be hearing my comedic
Allerton Music Barn tomorrow night.
Or lack thereof.
I will give away two pairs of tickets to the first and second caller at the number I will give as we start the music in just a moment. John Faddis, my guest on Live and Local with Chip McNeil. Thank you, gentlemen, both very much for joining us on the show. And for more information, AllertonMusicBarn.com. For more information on John Faddis, johnfaddis.net. And that's John without an H. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WYLL-FM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois, and we have additional support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. This Saturday's Labor Day weekend tasting features a variety of reds and whites, including Skyleaf and a Zinfandel from the White Gorilla. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. The number here at the studio, if you want to call for a pair of tickets, I'll give away two each to the first and second caller. Two tickets, one pair each to the first and second caller at area 217-244-2628 from John Faddis's Remembrances CD. This is called Laura by David Rexon.